And away we go with another edition of the Now program right here on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Scott Spears along with you for the ride, and we have got a great hour today. You're not going to want to miss For Love Nor Money. We have a little bit of housekeeping to do here before we get to our great guest. Now, we have a new prize pickup time here at the radio station. There's been some question of this over the last few days, so I do want to remind you that the prize pickup time, if you've won any of our great prizes, Monday through Thursday, 4 to 6 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 4 to 6 p.m. to pick up your prizes here at the station. I do want to remind you really quick about this, and we'll be telling you more about this in the days to come, but WWGH Radio is having our Ohio State Fair concert ticket giveaway extravaganza. This year, we have tickets, pairs of tickets, to all of the entertainment shows at the Ohio State Fair. We have tickets to Hank Williams Jr. and Toby Keith and Matthew West and REO Speedwagon, among a whole host of other concerts for the Ohio State Fair. Now, how we're going to do this, the Ohio State Fair this year is, July 24th. Through August the 4th. Now, what we're going to do is you will call in during any of our live programs, which are on the website, answer a trivia question, and we will put your name in a drawing starting tomorrow. And the day before each of these shows, Hank Williams Jr., Toby Keith, so on and so forth, REO Speedwagon, we will draw a name out, and that person will win a pair of free tickets to those shows. So that all starts tomorrow with the Charlie Evers Show, 10:10 a.m. to 12 noon, right here on WWGH Radio. Don't miss that. And I'll be on tomorrow night, 5:10 to 6 p.m., with the 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, and we'll be doing some giveaways as well as talking about maybe the Democratic debate and a whole lot of other things. So 40th Treasurer of the United States under President Bill Clinton, Mary Ellen Withrow, live in studio tomorrow. Now that we have all that housekeeping done, we turn to one of my favorite people. Always a pleasure to have her on this program here at a new time slot, but still the third Wednesday of the month. What a pleasure it is to talk with the undisputed queen of helpful hints, author, brilliant lady, Heloise. Heloise, how are you?
Well, good afternoon. It's nice to chat with you at a different time zone.
It's nice to talk while people are in their car driving home, so they'll get all this brilliant information as they're heading home tonight.
I call in early so I can hear some of the commercials and things like that, and you were talking about the state fair.
Right.
I have attended it.
Oh, really?
Yes. I'm trying to remember because I have a lot of newspapers in the Ohio area, and I must have been there for some reason, maybe giving a speech. I did a lot of work with the American Heart Association and would be a speaker there and visit the newspaper, and I remember being at the State Fair.
The State Fair is a lot of fun. It's a big two-week event, and it's just, you know, it's one of those things I'm so glad that happens outside.
Yes.
That people still go to.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And for the listeners, you know, if y'all are listening and you've never been to a state fair, put your toe in the water. Dip your little toe. You will be so pleasantly surprised and chagrined, you're going to ask yourself, why didn't I come here before? It's great for the family, and I do have a few hints if you've got little children. If the whole family dresses in the same colored T-shirts, if someone goes missing or happens to slip away, you can spot them.
That's a great tip, because the fairs are very busy, and it's easy to get separated.
It is. It is. And when I used to go with my father and my mother and my grandparents to the Texas State Fair, and, of course, my father was Air Force, the colonel, as we still call him. He's deceased now, but he's still the colonel. And before we would leave, we would all get together, and he would speak to the troops. Okay, here's what we're going to do. You stay in the line of sight. Don't run off to go pet something or buy something without telling somebody. If you're a child, you do not leave the group unless an adult is with you. And if you get separated, go to what appears to be a security guard, if you can see them. And if not, and this was a great hint from one of my readers, she said, tell them to teach the kids, go to a mother that has three or four kids with her, and like a mother duck, she'll get you to home and to the right people.
Well, there is nothing like, these are great tips, because there is nothing like the trauma of losing a young child at an event like that.
And it can happen in the blink of an eye. You know, the blink of an eye. So, but we don't want to scare anybody. We just want to say, you know, be careful, stay with your group, and have a great time. And I bet you will walk away having a wonderful, wonderful event. But you'll probably learn something that you may use now and you may use later on in life.
You know, one of the problems I find with things like the state fair, why people get separated, it's not necessarily that there are bad people out there.
No.
It's just that there are so many things to look at that sometimes the child will stop and start looking at this thing, and you're talking maybe to somebody else in your group, or, you know, it just happens.
Yeah. And, you know, my husband and I both ride motorcycles. And I ride a Ural. It's a Russian-made, and it's got a sidecar. And he's got another one with a sidecar. When we ride together, he always wants me in front of him. And when we're walking down a crowded street, say in Key West or New Orleans or something, he wants me in front of him so he can see me.
You know, this brings up an interesting question. When people recognize you as Heloise, when you're out doing something, what do they come up and say?
Well, I now travel wearing a hat. Because my hair is pretty distinctive. You know, it's silver or gray, whatever color. And when I was doing book tours, you know, I was on television, and then I'd run to the airport to go to the next city. And this man... Now, I'm not making this up. DFW, and luckily I had 45 minutes to my flight. And this man stops me and looks at me and goes, Heloise? I said, yes. I've been on television that morning. I said, yes. And here's what he said. Urine carpet. And I was like, are you asking me how do you get that out of the carpet? He said, well, yes. He says, oh, my God, my flight's late. Bye. In the middle of all these people walking back and forth going, why is he talking to that woman about urine in the carpet? So, that's part of it. And it comes with the territory. And I'm lucky that most people, the majority, 99.9%, are gracious. Sometimes they're funny. They share their hints. Or they ask a question and they need help. And that's what I'm here for.
So this begs the question, how do you get that out of the carpet?
Out of the top 10 questions that have come in over the 40 years, or at least 35 or more that I've been doing it, pet urine on carpet is one of them. Now we have generally, we're going to get technical here, but this is what I do. Okay, dog urine is slightly diluted. Cat's urine is very, very strong. So you treat them the same at the beginning. The first thing you do is take a roll of paper towels wherever the stain is, pull off 10 or 20, put it down, be sure you have shoes on, and you're going to stand on it. And that will pull up the majority of it. And you do it again, and that will pull up the majority of it. Then there are very, very good commercial cleaners on the market. But if you don't have one, you can make up, a cup of tap water, room temperature, a drop or two of dish soap that you use to hand wash dishes. Mix it up, and then you want to use either a sponge. Do not pour it directly on the carpet. You do not want to overwet the carpet. Put it on a sponge, and you start at the outside of the stain and go inwards, because if you go from the inside out, you're spreading it. And you do that, then you use clear water, just tap water, to remove the detergent, Then the final step is a little bit of my favorite vinegar, about a tablespoon, about half a cup of water. It's not very strong, and put it on a sponge. That will pick up any detergent or soap that is left behind. Then you're going to treat it again with the paper towels or get an old bath towel or something. And when our puppies were puppies, I would put the, I've got an old bath towel, you know, put that down, and then I take a stack of books and put it on there. And it would eventually wick up anything that was left.
You know, this is interesting, and I didn't mean to take this turn, but it's I like these turns. But I have noticed this in recent years, and I don't mean this as a joke, but some older people start to have problems with their bladder, and they might come over and sit too long, and people can guess what happens.
What do you? Not uncommon, by the way, Scott.
No, I know. It's you know, people are living longer.
Yes.
And it's just one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's embarrassing for them, so you don't call attention to it.
No.
But you do have to get that out.
Yeah.
Is it the same idea?
Yes, it is. You mean on furniture?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty much the same idea. Now, you know, I don't mention brand names, but there are several commercial pet odor and stain removers, and it's going to work the same thing on the problem you're talking about. But you, again, you don't want to overspray it. It's better to spray it once lightly, let it dry, come back, do the sniff test. Can you still smell it? Then another. Don't over wet. So you, if you do three applications, it may take a while. But it with furniture too. Oh, I'll tell you a great hint. If it's gone down into the padding on furniture, the stuffing, or even on carpeting, and one of our previous miniature schnauzers turned diabetic, and she was very, very good, but there were times she couldn't make it to the doggy door. So I cleaned it, and then my dear husband David came into the living room and said, "What the heck are you doing?" I had a syringe in my hand, and I had mixed up vinegar and water, and I'd pull it up in the syringe, shoot it through the carpet, down into, because I'm not going to rip the entire carpeting up, down into the padding, and I did quadrants, and over time, the odor dissipated, and it went away.
Now, where do you buy a syringe?
Depending on what state you live in, if you go to your pharmacy, and particularly if your pharmacist knows you, you can say, "That crazy Heloise, that woman in the paper, said, I need a syringe, and I'm going to shoot vinegar down into the padding." They'll probably give it to you. But the laws vary by state.
Now, is there any plan B if you can't get your hand on a syringe?
Yes, there is. A turkey baster, which most people have, and you want to pull up just a little bit, not too much, and then squirt it on, again, going from the outside in, let it dry completely, and then you may have to retreat.
Now, you don't want to keep this around for the turkey at Thanksgiving, do you?
No, it's only vinegar and water.
Oh, so it's okay.
Yeah.
So you can use that on the turkey.
Sure.
Well, see, I had an episode at Thanksgiving last year, and I'm a little leery this year about Thanksgiving. It's a little early to talk about that, but, you know, I had an episode last year because I have Thanksgiving at my house every year, and I usually cook the turkey, and last year, there were two bad incidents because I'm not sure what happened, but the turkey, the oven caught on fire. Yeah. And I still don't know what caused it. Thank goodness I was, you know, I didn't leave the house. So when it caught on fire, I just called the, luckily, here's an interesting thing.
Now wait, first let me do what I do in Heloise Central, and my staff does, investigative reporting. What kind of oven, gas or electric?
Electric.
I'll tell you what probably happened.
Yeah, tell, because I still don't know.
All right. With an electric oven, there's a coil on the bottom and then on the top. And if you put something in there that may tend to overflow, it can touch that coil. Now, are you talking like a big fire or just a little poof?
Well, to me, it seemed like a big fire, but I'll tell you what stopped it, and I didn't even think about this, when I realized that there were flames coming out of the oven.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. I just instinctively, before, because there's a lot of smoke involved, more smoke than fire, I think. But what I did was I bumped the door shut.
Yeah.
Which suffocated it.
Which suffocates it, correct.
Yeah. Now, I didn't mean to do that, but that's what when the fire people came, that's what they said, it was already out. Now, the house was full of smoke, but that when they showed up, and it was one of those things, you know, where people had already left for the night.
Oh, thank heavens.
Yeah. And I was, so this is Thanksgiving night, and here I was, see, this is one of the good reasons that you should wear pajamas. Because I was standing outside on a November night in Ohio,
yes,
which is cold, and I kind of left abruptly because I thought the house was burning down.
And let me interject again for your listeners. If it's a small kitchen fire and you can put it out or smother it, that's one thing. If it's anything larger, get out of the house, call 911, etc. Do not try to fight a large fire or something that could really consume areas that you can't control.
No. Like I said, I didn't even instinctively do that. As soon as I saw I did instinctively do it, but I did not plan to do that. I grabbed the phone and called 911 and got out.
Good.
I thought, all that's replaceable. But, you know, it's interesting because I do think that was the problem, because now that I think back about it, I think when that because I don't use the oven very, very often, and I think that coil got hot, and that's what happened, but I ended up outside in my pajamas, and the fire people came, and they
Did
were very nice.
Did you have a bathrobe on?
No, but, you know, I had, like, pajama bottoms.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
And a shirt. But you know what? So I'm outside, and they're in there, and, you know, it's a big production, because in my neighborhood, the fire engines don't show up very often.
Yeah.
And it's loud, and it's a lot of lights, and then they had to get the smoke out and turn on these big fans, and it was a thing. I'll never forget that Thanksgiving.
And let us say that firemen and women who do that job, they're there 24/7. They may be there at Thanksgiving. They may be there at Christmas. They may be there when it's an anniversary or somebody's birthday party. So if you have a chance, and I've done this for our fire department, because they came and rescued my military macaw parrot that had crawled up a tree, is I baked cupcakes and took it down there. Now, they knew me, so they knew it was safe. Or just stop by and say hi. They really, really sacrificed many things for us. And the same thing with EMS. I was just up in Hobbs, New Mexico, giving a presentation about heart healthy and things like that. And I looked down the audience, and in the front row was a woman in, like, a blue jumpsuit with patches on it. Well, I didn't have my contact on. And I started talking about, you know, what to do in an emergency. If you think you're having a stroke or heart attack, do not let one family member drive you there. You call 911. They will get there quicker, and they will treat you on the way to the hospital. And I pointed to this woman. I said, I asked a question, would you come up here? And she told it like it was. She said, look, we've seen it all. Do not hesitate to call us. We would rather come and you're fine than not come and you're dead.
Well, that's a good rule because, you know, a lot of people, especially people who live alone, really need
yes.
to think about this.
Yeah.
Because when you're alone, if something traumatic would happen in the middle of the night, mm-hmm. What are you going to do?
And that's why, you know, she really, I'm glad she was there because she really, really pressed home what I have always said. She said, we are professionals. We are there to help you. do not hesitate to call. And if you're okay, that's fine. Do not be embarrassed. We'd rather have you call than not call. And well, her hint was, ours is to keep, particularly as you said, if you're an older, you're a senior, and you live alone, keep a list of your medications, either and your primary doctor and contact information. You can tape it up on the refrigerator or roll it up and put it in like a pill bottle or something and put it in the freezer. They will look in there and see that for your information.
That's a good tip because so many people are on so many medications now. When the ambulance shows up, if you can't speak or are not thinking correctly, you might need to tell them.
And you may not be able to. You may, have had a concussion and your brain's not functioning right. And so it's really, and I carry a list like that in my wallet. Contact information, my husband's name and phone number, and the medications I'm on, which, by the way, are not that many, thankfully.
Well, that's always the good. You know, it's interesting. Modern medicine has come so far that when I think about this, I think about diabetics.
Yes.
Because diabetics take medication, obviously. Most of them do. But also, that is a disease. If you live alone, I mean, that can take a nasty turn very quick.
Well, yes. And what's really vital is good education, listening to your caregivers, your physicians, the nurses, doing a little research on your own, because I now have friends that are diabetic. In fact, one, her daughter was diabetic, and they didn't think she would live past 7 years old. Well, she's 24 now. She knows how to monitor it. She can tell when she's getting a little shaky, and it can be controlled, and you can have a happy life.
Well, that's true, and I think most people, the problem is, for some reason, human beings are wired to believe it will never happen to us.
Oh, God, how many times have I heard that?
Yeah, we all think that way. We really do.
Yeah.
I don't believe, I've said this before, now, I think they can say it, but I don't think there's a human being who's alive who believes that one day they will die. I think theoretically they know it's going to happen, but they don't think it will happen to them.
No.
Because we're just wired funny as humans.
Well, not really funny. It's that this is synchronicity. We were talking about something similar in the office, my office, with my magpies, and they have given me permission to call them that. And we were talking about taking care of elders, and maybe you have somebody in assisted living or a nursing home, and they're 80 and 85, the clock is not going to go backwards. You're not going to get younger. So do the best you can, listen to those who love you, and hopefully you'll last a little bit longer.
You know, but even those 85-year-olds, God bless them, you know, they're still, okay, now, what year will it be when I pay off this car? And what do I need to do in 5 years? I mean, I guess it's optimistic thinking. And
yes,
some people do live that long.
When my father was finally in the colonel, in a nursing home, I never took his car away. And I parked it in the parking lot where he could see it from his window. And he was still lucid. And he would say, "That's my car." And I said, "Yes, sir." And it is, as you know, getting someone, particularly males, to give up the keys to their car is very, very difficult. So what I did was, I would take Daddy to his doctor's appointments. And I met with the doctor first, and I said, it's time. I said, but he will listen to you more than he will listen to me. So I let the doctor handle it. And Daddy reluctantly gave up his keys.
Mm. That's interesting. You know what I have found? Even older gentlemen who are in the throes of dementia still talk about their cars.
Yes, yes.
It's something about a man and his car that just goes on and on forever and ever.
Well, it's I don't know whether it's ingrained, whether it's, you know, nature versus nurture, but if it's an interest that you have had, say, the majority of your life, it's part of you. It's part of your psyche. And you can go back and think, oh, yeah, I remember when I took that car apart. My brother, Lewis, when he was in his teens, just loved automobiles. And he and Daddy, my mother, the original Heloise, came home from, she was not syndicated at the time, and she came home from something, and the entire engine to the car was laid out in the garage. But methodically. And Lewis took it apart, and he and Daddy put it back together. So that stays with you. It's like me and my motorcycle, which is a 1974 Kawasaki 175. And I've still got it. I don't ride it anymore because I've already had a broken leg. But I can't give it up.
You have to hold on to something.
Yeah.
And
I'll tell you what, if I went out to the barn right now, that puppy would start. Maybe a little tough, but it would.
Now, do you think you'll ever get back on it?
Probably not. No, because at this point in my life, balance sometimes, and I've already had a car hit me, and I know what it's like, and motorcycle safety is really paramount. And for people who drive, if you see a motorcycle, please don't ignore it. Don't, you know, just pretend it's another automobile. And so regardless of that, talking with my husband today, David, I said, David, you know, I love you very, very much. I love Shammy, our adoptee, Silky Wheaton. I said, third are my plants. These are my babies. I get joy from taking care of them, pruning them, watering them. I actually talked to one. And I have, is it Ficus or Ficus? I think it's Ficus.
I think it's Ficus. I've heard Ficus.
I think it's Ficus. Went from our wedding. And that thing is still alive in the same pot. And I go and I prune it a little bit. I give it, you know, some plant food. I play symphony music. No, I'm teasing you on that one.
You know, it's good, though, to have a good affordable habit.
Yes, and that's a key, Scott, when you said affordable. Is most of us, there's maybe a little extra spending money. You know, something that brings you joy, brings you happiness, or something that you're really interested in, playing chess, things like that. You need something uplifting, something that you can look forward to, even if it's, you know, two chess games with a neighbor or somebody in the park, and that will keep you going.
I think that's right, and I think that people are getting away from this because of the internet age, and I'm not sure when people who are 30 now get to 60 or 70, what's going to happen.
Who knows what technology will be like by then?
Well, that's the thing. You never. It's moved so fast in the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. You know, I think here this month we're celebrating. We're big here in Ohio on this because of Neil Armstrong, the 50th anniversary, and Buzz Aldrin of the walk on the moon.
Yes.
1969.
Yes.
And you think about that, and you think, you know, 50 years ago, but it happened.
If you had said to someone in 1880. That in less than 100 years, there's going to be a man walking on the moon, they would have put you in a loony bin. So you never know what's down the road. And I think your observation is quite correct. I was a double major in business mathematics with a teacher's certificate. And mathematically, technology is running at a faster pace than anything else in the past. And so just either embrace it and go with it, or maybe you put your little toe in the water and say, okay, I'll do this. But mostly it generally makes your life easier.
You know, it's interesting. One of my friends on the program who I became close with over the years was Helen Thomas, who was the dean of the White House Press Corps.
I know her.
Yeah, Helen was great. Helen was a wonderful woman. And
wasn't she a piece of work?
Oh. She didn't mind speaking her mind, which was good.
No, she didn't.
Which was good.
And every president was basically like, I have to call on her, don't I?
You had to.
You do.
Yeah, she was right there in the front row.
Yes, right in the front row. And didn't she have sort of red hair?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she told me, because she was there talking about the moon, that when President Kennedy gave his press conference, well, I guess it wasn't the press conference, but this was, he met with some people and some reporters, and at this meeting he said, you know, by the end of this decade, which being the 60s, we're going to have a man on the moon. And he said, oh, they all clapped, and that was great. And they said as soon as President Kennedy walked out, they all turned to each other and said, boy, this guy's nuts. But it happened.
But it happened. And see, that's you never know what's going. My analogy is, particularly things like that, and it's like the Wizard of Oz. You never know what's going on behind the curtain, and you never know. It could be a small company in Warren, Ohio. You know, it could be a small company in Yakima, Washington, that is working on something. They have a passion. And they either develop something or sometimes stumble across it that improves our life and makes life, like, easier.
You know, I'm a big proponent of the moon landing, of course, being here in Ohio and from Ohio. But that whole event changed how people regard everything, because anytime there's a problem with anything in your life now, like my ongoing issue with can openers that they break. See, I use this phrase as well, and so do other people, and I wonder what people used to say before the moon, but when the can opener breaks on me,
yeah,
I say they can put a man on the moon, but they can't make a can opener that works. What did they used to say before they put a man on the moon?
Well, Scott, I'll tell you what. I'm talking a bit about my father, because I was going through some photos, found a great photo of him to show my staff, you know, what he looks like when I talk about the colonel. He played golf. And golf fanatics. Now, he wasn't a fanatic, but he enjoyed golf. And he finally said, well, I can probably buy the most expensive golf clubs. They may even be custom-made, but it's the person holding the handle who makes the decision.
That's the truth. That's the truth. I don't know what it is about the can openers. And, you know, but I've still got them.
Why do you keep them?
As a reminder of the trauma that I've been through. It's like people who keep their x-rays.
Well, I'm not sure about that, but I'll tell you what. Here's the Heloise hint for you. My book, Get Organized with Heloise, when I was writing it, and so I came up with, it's two mantras. It's 5 minutes or five things. That junk drawer in the kitchen, that coat closet that is crammed full, you know, the shelf in the laundry room. And you look at it and go, ugh. All right, so either you go and spend 5 minutes and that's it, and you can come back, or you touch and deal with five things. If you do that within a matter of a day or two, it's going to be cleaned. It has not caused you any trauma. Now, for you, Scott, I don't have a degree in psychology. I'm not a psychiatrist. I don't play one on television. But you've got to let them go. Why don't you save one of them?
Well, because I think it's a memory of a pattern of, see, I don't have an electric can opener.
You're so funny.
No, I don't, you know, I don't have, for people who don't know what we're talking about,
yes,
here,
yes,
is,
please explain.
I should catch, because what has happened is I refuse to buy an electric can opener. Now, I would take one, probably if somebody gave it to me, but I refuse to buy it because I've had such a can opener trauma in my life, because I've always started with these, you know, handheld, you know, put them on a can, turn.
Well, we all did, if you're a certain age.
Yes, and for some reason, these things are not made like they used to be.
No.
And so I buy them, and then I take them home, and like 6 months later, the thing breaks. And then I have to go to the store and buy a new one. And I've accumulated now several of these can openers because...
Do they have their own drawer or space in the kitchen?
Oh, yeah, they're all in the same drawer.
Okay.
Yeah, with other things like the turkey baster.
Yes.
They're all in there. And it just annoys me that none of them last more than 6 months. And I don't know what it is. Am I turning the handle wrong? Because
now, can I give you a hint?
Okay.
Okay. In your case, it's better to buy the best that there is and spend more money and have it last longer. See, my husband is a retired plumbing, heating, air conditioning contractor. Hot air balloonist, among things. And he's the one who taught me. You know, I'm always like, well, let's save a few bucks and buy this one. And Dave is like, no, we're buying this one because it's built well, it's sturdy, and it will last much longer. And the few dollars difference over a couple of years, you know, it's a cup of coffee.
Well, I think that's right. And that's what always, you know, because I'm frugal. And I go to the store, and, you know, all the can openers are laid out in the same aisle. And I look at them, and I think, okay, well, that one is $13, but that one is $24. And then I think to myself, why is that one $24?
Because it is probably made of sturdier materials, and it's probably heavy duty, and it will last you longer.
But,
and you know what, Scott? Depending on which store you go to, save your receipt. And if it breaks in 6 months or so, try to return it to the store. Generally, if it's a national chain or something, they will either refund your money or you can get another one.
Well, see, that I'm afraid, though, of the trauma that will go along with it because... I know that if I buy the $24 can opener, yeah, and it breaks, then I'm really... You know.
Well, then, if that's the case, have your neighbor come over and have them open a can for you.
I wish they would. I'm just about to give up on cans altogether. I'm just going to start with twist tops and stick with this twist tops and ties and things like that. I don't even want to eat canned food anymore. The whole thing is just too much.
It's too much for you. And see, I'm the opposite. Is that, in fact, we cleaned out my pantry. And my staff and I did, and I look in there, and it's almost empty to me, because having a full pantry or half full, you know that if something happens, the power goes out, or there's a natural disaster, is that, and we have a place on the Texas coast, and I did the same thing, and people would come over, and they'd say, this looks like a grocery store, and I said, you know what? If the power goes out, we can live out of the pantry. And if the power goes out, your refrigerator's not going to work. And at the very minimum, you can eat green beans, you can have vegetables, chili, stew, you know, all those kind of things. And so in your case, I'm begging you, go buy a good can opener.
You know, that reminds me, we're here in the Midwest, and every time there's a big snowstorm, people go and buy bread and milk.
Right.
And I think that's going to spoil if your electric goes out.
Correct.
Why would you buy that? Why wouldn't you buy, like, saltine crackers?
Yes, you know, exactly, yeah. Now, also in disaster recovery, because we have several columns for that, if the power goes out, do not keep opening the refrigerator. Take out what you think you're going to use, and then either wrap it in blankets or some sort of insulation, and that the majority of the food that's in there will stay okay for about, I think it's 48 to maybe 72 hours, depending. And if you have a cooler, an ice chest, take out what you think you're going to use in the next 2 days, put it in the ice chest, and keep the door to the refrigerator closed. Same thing with the freezer.
This is interesting. It's a good segue because we are in tomato season. And people love to grow tomatoes. People love to buy tomatoes. Matter of fact, I had tomatoes on a hamburger that I ate this afternoon. Tomato is always a great thing to add to just about anything. Mm-hmm. Now, but shouldn't tomatoes be refrigerated?
Technically, no. If you refrigerate a tomato, it stops. Now, here's the caveat. It stops the ripening process. So when you're shopping for tomatoes and you know you're going to use them over the next 3 or 4 days, buy one or two that are ripe and ready to eat then, one or two that in a day or two will be ripe, and then one or two that need to ripen more. If they ripen to if they're ripe enough that they've got it to the point, then it's okay to refrigerate it because it's not going to continue ripening. And there are some tomatoes. In fact, my husband just bought us some Texas sweets and something or other that on the packaging it actually says do not refrigerate.
That's interesting. So the tomatoes do not have to go in the refrigerator.
Not unless if they are ripe and ready to eat, you can put them in the refrigerator because that will stop the ripening process. But when you're going to use them to put them on a sandwich or a salad, bring them out, and then they'll be perfect.
Now, once you cut the tomato up, do you have to refrigerate it then?
If it's in a salad, of course. If you're making, I'll do that. I do tomatoes, green olives, sometimes black olives, and then I may mix in a little bit of lettuce, sometimes onions when my husband is not here. and nibble on that for a day or two, and it goes right into the fridge, stays perfectly, it's chilled perfectly, and tasty.
Well, that's good, because today on the hamburger that I had, it was at a big, kind of a buffet-style thing, and they had tomato as one of the options to put on your hamburger, and it was cut tomato, of course, but it looked fresh, but it was not, obviously, refrigerated.
You mean on the buffet table?
Well, yeah, but people were serving it. It was like a catered thing.
Yeah.
So I hope maybe they had it refrigerated. I don't know.
Who knows?
Well, they had macaroni salad, so I assume they had some kind of refrigeration.
Oh, well, that'll make up for anything.
Yeah, yeah. And this was like 11 o'clock this morning, so I assume I would know by now if this stuff was not refrigerated.
I think you're okay, Scott.
Yeah, I think so. But those buffets... even when people are serving them, even if it's like a catered thing, you know, I always worry because I don't know who's been through before me.
What difference does that make?
Well, because people touch the buns and things.
Oh, okay.
You know,
okay.
They come through and they touch the buns. And
well,
then
they usually have tongs that you should use or you should pick up. And it's not necessarily etiquette, but it's a courtesy. Is use the tongs, or look at what you want, pick it up, put it on your plate.
Well, that's right. You can't sample. You can't look around at things.
No sampling.
No. Why have we never? You know, we were able to put a man on the moon, but we can't come up with anything better than tongs.
I have no idea.
Wouldn't you think by now we'd have something a little more?
No, tongs are easy to use. They're sanitary. They can pick up most anything, whether it's a roll or sometimes a slice of cheese or if it's a sandwich buffet. I can't think of any. You know what? Maybe one of your listeners is in the garage working on an improvement to the tongs.
Well, I don't understand why we still use cans.
Why we still use what?
Cans.
Cans.
Yeah, why can't everything be twist up or twist top? Or?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
you're saying.
Why are we still in? Because these cans seem to be a little outdated.
Well, part of it is the canning process, particularly when you're talking about that, is, you know, there's a certain way they do it, and they literally seal in freshness. And here's an interesting factoid. depending, unless you go to a farmer's market and buy spinach, okay, or tomatoes or something, a canned, if it's been done properly, that you go to the grocery store and on the shelf, that generally has more nutrients in it than the fresh one that may have been trucked 2 days and been sitting out in the grocery store.
Hmm. You would never think that.
I know. That's why I'm Heloise.
That's exactly right. And that's why we always love having you on the program. And we ran out of time on this, but next month we are going to make sure to get to college kids and laundry, because that is something that is number two on the list of plagues of our nation, right behind...
Oh, have I got stories for
you. That's a big problem.
It is. And I'd invite you to visit my website, because they've been redesigning it, but it should be up there, is where I did visit my alma mater, Texas State University in San Marcos, and did a Heloise 101 for these freshmen. How to do laundry, how to do this. No, you don't store this. You don't. And I asked for volunteers. So this young man is like 18 or 19. I said, what's your name, et cetera, et cetera. I said, so how often do you wash your bed sheets, you know, your linens? And he said, what?
Oh. Uh-oh.
And I was like, okay. And then the other one said, well, I don't have sheets. And I said, really? He goes, I brought my sleeping bag.
See, this is where you have to have a jar of vinegar and a syringe around to fix problems like that. Because that sounds like a big problem.
Yeah, it does to me, too.
Oh, my.
All I can say is I hope he showers every day before going to bed.
This is going to be a great topic when we talk again in August. Heloise, it's always a pleasure talking with you. I hope you enjoy your tomatoes, and I'm going to enjoy mine, and we'll talk again in August.
Okay. Happy trails.
Thank you, Heloise.
Bye-bye.
The one and only Heloise, the queen of helpful hints. For this day, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout. Stay tuned. More programming right around the corner.
Mechanicals.com. Thomas Lawn Service for all your lawn care and landscaping needs. Telephone number 74751-17.